It is Taglieri versus Taraz, Mr. Bazile.
Yeah, please the court, your honors. My name is Mark Bazile. I represent the plaintiff appellant in this case. Just for a brief synopsis of the pertinent facts, this is a case in which a patron of a riverboat casino was injured on the boat. The defendant, Eppley, brought a motion for summary judgment in the federal court, and attached to that motion was simply an affidavit from the defendant, Eppley's director of marine operations, Brent Willis. Mr. Willis, in his affidavit, did not indicate that this boat was indefinitely moored, did not indicate that it was permanently moored, and said nothing as to whether the Southern Star, the riverboat in this case, would ever sail again. The issue here is whether a federal court has maritime tort jurisdiction over a case involving an injured passenger aboard a moored riverboat casino. We would assert that the federal courts do have general maritime jurisdiction over this case.
Now, she fell off a stool while playing.
She was playing a slot machine, and the stool broke. She fell backwards, herniating her a disc in her neck.
Was the boat moving or something that tipped over the
condition
stool?
The physical condition of the stool, I think, was in disrepair, and we never
had nothing to do with the boat rocking or taking.
We never even got to that point.
Breaking of the stool is what created the problem.
Correct. What caused the breaking of the stool is unknown at this point. Obviously,
well,
at this
the stool
stage,
was obviously poorly prepared. You know, or poorly built.
Correct.
And whether it wasn't made out of oak, it was made.
So I get my big problem is how this whole incident disrupted maritime commerce.
Well,
because I don't see this as being a situation like Weaver.
Well, as this court found in the Weaver case.
But I'm saying I don't think Weaver is close to this case.
Well, Weaver was an injured employee who brought claims under general maritime jurisdiction as well as the Jones Act. And this court held in that case that it didn't look to whether there was actual disruption to maritime commerce. It looked at the potential. And in that case, Weaver was an employee who actually went to help another employee because a coin box fell over, and she injured herself. And you cannot say that, well, in there was a potential disruption of maritime commerce.
Except she was a crew member, and she could have been called upon to perform other duties, and so there was a potential injury there.
Well, the injury
potential.
Here, well, the potential disruption to maritime commerce here is that, one, this patron is no longer patronizing
this establishment.
Well, it's attenuated,
of course. It's all a matter of degree. But let me ask you this. Why do you want to be in admiralty jurisdiction? Because you can't have a jury. Why wouldn't you rather be under Illinois tort law?
Well, quite frankly, all of the case law at the time that I obtained this case actually pointed to the fact that this is an admiralty jurisdiction case and that the state laws do not have
jurisdiction. Well, my broader question is, of course, the jury is a big difference between admiralty and regular state law, but are there other differences between kind of how admiralty treats? So Judge Barrett says, like this is a defective product case of some sort, or
wouldn't
it's a slip and fall. Or
wouldn't whatever. Be a statute of limitations problem?
Yeah,
would it?
Right. Would it be?
There is a statute of limitations problem. State court is 2 years. Federal court, it would be admiralty.
So it's over the statute of limitations. So you couldn't file in the state court, so you had to file in the federal court if you're going to file at all.
Correct, but however, all the case law I think points to the fact that
I understand. I'm just talking. If you are going to get a choice, one of the things that influences you can't file in the state court because you're too late.
Right.
That eliminates that choice. The only choice you had available to you was the federal court.
Correct.
Okay. That's just done. Nothing wrong with that.
Besides procedural differences like jury trial and statute of limitations, what about different rules about duties to a business invitee, for example? Would that figure that somehow admiralty has developed some concept? Now, if it's a worker who's injured, then you have the Jones Act. Of course, that's, has a lot of special provisions. But if it's just a passenger, it's not the Jones Act. It's some kind of general admiralty case, a judge-made admiralty doctrines. Are there special doc say about invitees that might make it sensible for this to be an admiralty case rather than a state law?
Well, I don't believe that's the issue in this case. First of all, I don't think it's been addressed, and I think it would just come under ordinary negligence principles. In the Jones Act, obviously, the analysis is different than the maritime jurisdiction.
Well, picking up Judge Bauer's point about the statute of limitations, so is there any the fact that the statute of limitations may be longer in admiralty? That's not a reason why this case somehow belongs in admiralty jurisdiction. It would belong in admiralty jurisdiction if there were special admiralty rules, as there is for the worker in the but apparently there are no special admiralty rules for a case like this.
Well, again, I think general negligence principles would apply. However, I think the question in this case is simply whether the federal court has jurisdiction to hear the case or not. Obviously,
one reason to say it does or doesn't is to say, well, there's actually a body of law here that's better fitted to this particular type of accident than another body of law. So you might say, admiralty law, you know, it's really designed to deal with this kind of accident. Not an Illinois tort law wouldn't be appropriate.
Well, there are cases.
Like you could say, the reason there's a longer statute of limitations is that, you know, ships could be anywhere. It could take a long time for you to reach port and bring your suit. Would that be?
Well, I mean, the case law is clear that this type of case is brought in federal court under general maritime jurisdiction because it occurred on a vessel in navigable waters, and that's the analysis to be used in this case, not the Jones Act, where the vessel must be in navigation at the time of the incident. And this accident did occur on a vessel as per the definition and per this court's holding in
Howard.
But
the Groupart case suggests that the fact that the accident occurs within the admiralty jurisdiction isn't enough. That it occurs on navigable waters. There has to be something else. You know, I don't know what it is, but there has to be something more, right?
Well, that's the first part in Groupart is the locus test,
so
which
Groupart
is a vessel on navigable waters.
With apparent approval, a case in which a person dove into navigable waters and was injured. And apparently the court held that was not an admiralty case.
Why
is that different from this case?
Well, the two-part test, one is the locus test. It has to be a vessel on navigable waters, which this is. The second part of the test is the nexus test. It has to have a substantial relationship to maritime activity, and it has to have a potential disruption.
Why didn't the swimmer? The swimmer dives in and drowns, we'll say, and then they're busy dragging the bottom for the body, and navigation is interrupted. Right.
Well,
why is that any more tenuous than what we have here?
The swimmer bringing that cause of action obviously is not on a vessel at the time. It is not something just as an executive jet where an airplane crashed into the...
But he's interfering with navigable waters. What does it matter whether he's on a vessel?
Well, that he didn't satisfy the first part of it. There's two tests, the locus
test. What if he's floating down, on an inner tube and ships have to stop?
Well, again, the court has to look at the two-part test, the locus test.
If you have a swim team, they're swimming across the river and they're stopping all the boat traffic.
Again, they're not satisfying the first part of the test, the locus test, because they're not the incident or accident is not occurring on a vessel.
They're in navigable waters.
They're not on a vessel.
What difference
swimming
does
is
that
not
make?
Being on a vessel, just like an executive jet, a plane flying over the Lake Erie crashed into Lake.
What if your client had fallen out of a porthole?
That might be a different situation.
Really?
In other words, she's sitting on the stool,
she falls off the stool and hits her head, that's one thing. But if the stool is, you know, outside and she falls off into the water, you're saying it's not an admiralty
I'm saying it would be. It's a different factual situation, but that would be covered under general maritime.
Why does it matter whether she dives or falls off a boat or an inner tube?
Well, because the courts look at whether the tort itself occurred on the vessel or the tort occurred as of something that happened on a vessel on navigable waters. Just like in Sasan, that was a case in which the boat was moored at the dock, a fire started on the boat, and it spread to the pier. That came under general maritime jurisdiction because that tort occurred on a vessel on navigable waters and then spread elsewhere. It appears my first part of time is up, and I was saving 3 minutes for rebuttal. Thank you.
Mr. Casbaum?
Good morning. May it please the Court, Frank Kasbaum for Harrah's. First, I think both parties were shooting in the dark until the Stewart versus Dutra opinion was decided by the U.S. Supreme Court, and that was decided after the briefs and opinion, or after the briefs at least, I think before the magistrate's opinion. But that clarified what the United States Supreme Court will accept as a definition of vessel, and that issue had been looked at in some context by the Seventh Circuit in both Howard and Weaver. But the Supreme Court has made clear that it is a vessel if it is being used to transport passengers over water, transport or material, or if it's capable of being used. At the time that these briefs were filed, the focus was on the use of the vessel or the watercraft. It was not discussed whether the vehicle was capable of being used, and Brent Willett's affidavit does not go into that. Therefore, the question is, in light of Stewart versus Dutra, what can we say about whether this casino...
Now, what is this new case you're talking about?
Stewart versus Dutra Construction Company.
So have either party brought this to our attention?
I did in the response brief.
Oh, you said the briefs had been filed before.
I'm sorry, the underlying briefs, Your Honor, in the trial court. It was not addressed because it wasn't decided.
I see. But you discussed it in your reply. This is the case you discussed in your reply brief.
Correct. And so on appeal, we're discussing an issue raised by the Supreme Court that hadn't been decided by the trial court because we didn't know about it. So in one sense, we're recasting our arguments. And the Supreme Court gave a very broad definition of what a vessel was.
Okay, so you're agreeing this is a this is a boat, and your argument is now just that this particular accident doesn't have sufficient, you know, practical relation to navigation to justify admiralty jurisdiction.
Didn't interfere.
Is that right?
I don't agree that it's a boat. What I'm saying is there's probably a fact question because Brent Willis's affidavit doesn't address.
You think it ought to go back for determination of whether it's a fact question?
No, I don't.
Well, then what is your position?
My position is that it doesn't matter.
Why bring it up?
Well,
because I have to, because the Supreme Court addressed it.
No, we already addressed it in your brief.
Okay.
So your issue is whether it had a disruptive impact.
Yes. The nexus test for federal jurisdiction, there has to be a potentially disruptive impact on commerce, or it has to bear a substantial relationship to traditional maritime activity. Unfortunately, if this moored casino can be moved every 20 minutes, with 20 minutes undocking, it probably has a potentially disruptive impact on maritime activity simply because it'll be out on the Fox River or Des Plaines River, whichever one we're on.
Well, I don't understand. Are you conceding his case or
no,
what?
No, I'm getting to my point.
Boy, you're better move quickly on your point.
Rush right to it. I'm almost
we're
lost.
We're completely confused now.
We sure are.
The reason you can affirm is because this incident bears no substantial relation to traditional maritime activity. That is the second prong of the nexus test required to establish federal jurisdiction. There are two cases cited from...
But how is it different from Weaver, right? I mean, aren't we
it's different
cutting,
from Weaver.
Cutting this pretty fine? He's a worker, but is it?
On this point, Your Honor, Weaver glossed over the question of substantial relation to maritime activity. It did not simply...
Well, I don't think you want to say it. I mean, you don't want to... Are you asking us to overrule Weaver?
No.
Judge Mannion's skipped over something?
No, it didn't have to address the issue.
That characterization.
It didn't have to address the issue. We are here because the Weaver boat was moving. This boat was moving.
Yeah, but we're beyond the boat, right? I thought you were going to say the point is not that it is or is not a vessel moored permanently or not moored or what have you. It's that this kind of accident doesn't have any impact. It wouldn't make any difference if this vessel was moving, would it?
No.
She fell off the stool? So,
no. The question is whether it bears a substantial relation to traditional maritime activity.
Because you're conceding it had a potentially disruptive impact.
There's a fact question that would have to be determined. We'd have to know what it would take under the Stewart versus Dutra test to get this boat. Could it never sail again? In which case, this should be affirmed on that basis. We just don't know because we didn't have the opinion. But what we do know is that regardless, it's only gambling on a boat incident to state legislation. That has nothing to do with traditional maritime activity.
What if it were a crew member who was injured?
That would be Jones Act, but for a patron, and it's a different analysis. But for federal.
But why is it different? I mean, from the standpoint of disruption of navigation or something like that, what's the difference between the crew member and the passenger?
I can only tell you that the Groupart court made it different and said that there must be, that's the second prong of the nexus test. There
Groupart
must be
wasn't
this.
Talking about passengers versus crew. It wasn't about that at all. It was about a flood.
Well, but there's still the test, and that's
yeah,
the statement.
Yeah, so now apply the test and tell us why it makes a difference whether the person is a crew member or a passenger.
It doesn't.
But then we'd have to overrule Weaver.
It has to bear a substantial relation to traditional maritime activity, irrespective of crew or passenger.
Well, are you asking us to overrule Weaver?
No, you don't have to because the facts are different.
Well, what's the factual difference?
Does this bear a substantial relationship?
That's not a factual difference. That's a question. What is the factual difference?
The factual difference is in Weaver, the boat was moving. This boat wasn't. It was a crew member.
Why does it make a difference whether it's moving or not? She still falls off the stool. Now, as Judge Bauer asked, maybe the boat is rocking, and that's a maritime-like. But well, presumably this riverboat is not rocking it, back and forth.
Well, crew member or patron, this is no different than a restaurant, marina restaurant, and somebody falling off a stool. It is no different, and for that reason,
but that's
no
true if the boat is moving, right? People eat on boats, on real boats that move around, right? They eat. So if, what's the difference?
If this boat can move...
What if it's, you know, the Queen Mary or something, and a passenger chokes on a chicken bone? Now, is that, and she sues? Is that an admiralty claim?
If the Queen Mary's floating,
don't
it is.
Don't if me, would you please? Yeah. You know what the Queen Mary is? A boat. It's going back and forth.
It's moving.
It's moving. Yes, it's an admiralty case.
Then it's a federal there's a federal jurisdiction under maritime law.
Yes.
Okay. Interesting. We need an oar up here. We're short.
Now why is that? Wait, I've lost you. Is it because I don't want to get into the Atlantic Ocean? So suppose you have a cruise ship on the Great Lakes, so it's entirely within the United States, and this person chokes on a chicken bone.
Then
is that an admiralty case?
Under these cases, it is.
Yes.
And let me ask you this.
But if I may just reply, Judge, if that same person chokes on a dockside marina that can never sail, it's not an admiralty case.
Well, no. We don't know whether this boat can never sail.
That's why I say on that point there's a question of fact.
But you said it was irrelevant to your argument.
On the question of whether it's substantially related.
I don't know.
So let me ask you about this Sisson case, because there the Supreme Court said a docking a vehicle at a marina on a navigable waterway is a common, if not indispensable, maritime activity. If we look at that case, doesn't our scenario fit so that we do have a substantial relationship to traditional maritime activity?
No. And the reason is, in Stewart versus Detra, they looked at that very issue. The Supreme Court looked at that very issue and said, just because a ship's in for dry dock repairs doesn't make it no longer a vessel, any more than a casino that's permanently moored is a vessel simply because it's a boat.
Gotcha.
And that's the dichotomy they tried to...
This requires more careful analysis than I thought it did at first blush. I understand your position.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Caswell.
And I also understand yours.
Mr. Basil, how much time does he have? 1 minute?
First of all, I need to point out that the Stewart case was not, again, a case under general admiralty jurisdiction. It was brought under the Longshore and Harbor Workers' Compensation Act. The analysis are different. And in that case, the Supreme Court stated... Right.
Well, give us the gist of it, if you remember.
Well, this is what the Supreme Court said. Looking to whether watercraft is motionless or moving is a sort of snapshot test that we rejected in Chandris. Just as a worker does not oscillate back and forth between Jones Act coverage and other remedies, depending on the activity in which the worker was engaged in while injured, neither does a watercraft pass in and out of Jones Act coverage, depending on whether it was moving at the time of the accident. And that's the case here.
The only question that's raised is whether or not what happened interfered with normal maritime activity.
It did.
I know. That's what you said, and he says that's the issue, so let's leave it at that. You're not going to enlarge the problem. The problem's big enough to where you land at. Well, I understand what your position is.
Well,
you made it abundantly clear both in your argument and the brief.
Okay.
So you're saying any accident on a vessel should be within the Admiralty mm-hmm. jurisdiction?
As long as it meets the two-part test,
test. No, please. I'm trying to understand. I don't want
the answer to that should be yes.
I don't want the qualifications. Any accident on a vessel is within the Admiralty jurisdiction. Isn't that your position?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so we'll move to our last case.